My name is Peter West. I work in the Enterprise Architecture Group at Nationwide Building Society. We're a financial services institution based in the UK. What I'd like to do today is give you a bit of a case study on what we've been doing with virtualization over the last 18 months to 2 years at Nationwide. So I'm going to give you a bit of a story about how we started with virtualization and where we are with that today. So just to briefly give you a bit of background, I'll give you a bit of a history about Nationwide Building Society and what we're currently looking at from a technology infrastructure point of view. Then I'll go on to talk about our server consolidation strategy and how that started and links into our virtualization program. And then the meat of the presentation is really around the future of virtualization, what we're doing with VR3, and where we're taking that moving forward. And we've turned that strategy alive, automated lights out virtual enterprise, so we've branded that strategy internally and also with the partners that we're currently working with. So, just to give you a bit of an introduction, so Nationwide is a financial services institution. We're UK-based, and for those of you in the US, we're a bit like a mutual savings and loan company. We're not owned on the market by our shareholders. We're owned up by our members. And we offer high street financial services to about 25 to 30% of the UK population. So we do internet banking, mortgages, savings, loans, investments, that sort of thing for them. All of our services are based in the UK. We don't have a presence outside of the UK. But we do have a small subsidiary organisation that looks after expatriates and offers them tax-free financial savings through the Isle of Man. So we're the largest building society in the world, which is not a huge claim because there aren't many building societies outside of the UK, but we're the seventh largest financial institution in the UK. We're actually in the process of agreeing a merger with another building society called the Portman. If that's actually agreed, then the Nationwide will become the second largest mortgage vendor and second largest savings provider in the UK financial services industry. We're quite an innovative technology company. We've been first to market with a number of things. So we were the first to market with a phone banking service back in the 90s, and we were the first UK bank to have an internet presence and offer online banking to our customers. And we currently have probably about 25 to 30% of our members are actually using the online bank on a daily basis. Our technology infrastructure is like any other large enterprise company. It's complicated by a whole range of different services, a number of different mainframes. We have a Unisys mainframe which looks after all of our savings systems, a Fujitsu ICL mainframe that looks after all of our mortgage business, an IBM system that looks after our life insurance business, and also, from a personal point of view, probably the most important mainframe of all is it runs our payroll system and our pension system as well. All of that's front-ended by somewhere in the region of 700 to 1,000 Microsoft application servers running a mix of services like BizTalk, web services based on the .NET platform, MSNQ, and SQL databases. Going out to offer all of the range of services you can see on the screen there to all of our customers, whether it be over the phone, on the bank, on the net, over home PC, via cash point machines, etc. So, to give you a bit more of a view of what we've been doing from a server consolidation strategy, this is a very high-level overview of what our estate actually looks like in the data center today. As you can see, we have a web services farm, a web server farm, so that's most of our application development goes through those processes. We have a large bunch of commodity servers that provide lots of disparate third-party application services. All of these are based on Windows applications, and there's about 700 of those. And we have a very small in-production ESX farm today, which is starting to grow, and I'll talk in a lot more detail about what we're doing in that space as I go through the presentation. We also have on the left of the screen the ES7000 from Unisys, which we use for database consolidation. That's the 32-bit platform providing SQL 2000 services. That's probably the equivalent of about 150 to 200 individual commodity servers, but that's going to gradually be replaced by 64-bit platforms as we move forward. So our physical strategy has been to provide a farm of commodity servers for each type of service that we offer. And what we're looking to do moving forward now is offer that same concept, that same approach, but on the virtualization platform. So where are we with virtualization today at Nationwide? What is it we're actually doing? We've been running virtualization as a platform within Nationwide for about two and a half years. And our first move into this space was through virtual server from Microsoft. We were actually on the TAP program for that, and we deployed about 10 host servers, small number of VMs, and that's actually grown. It's a manually managed environment today, but we're in the process of replacing that with a VI3 platform, which I'll talk about as we get towards the end of the presentation. So one of the things we wanted to do was take that virtualization strategy and move it into production, and we recognized very early on that virtual server wouldn't provide the robust management services that we actually needed in production. So we had to present a business case to our senior management team around VMware. The reason we had to do that in quite a lot of detail was because as a large Microsoft customer, we had to be very sure that going down a non-Microsoft route would actually provide the right level of service for us, both commercially and technically, and we've been able to prove that. So to demonstrate that to the management team, we had to put a small business case together to actually show that virtualization on the VMware platform was a better technical case and a better business case for us than the virtual server platform. And we then got a sign-off from that management team to do a proof of concept on the VMware platform itself with a small bunch of VMs in production with a whole bunch of success criteria, as you can see on the screen up there, which was presented and put together by our infrastructure guys, our operations guys, and our development guys who have owned the relationship with the business. So we put all of that together and ran our proof of concept, which we ran for about 30 days, just to get those virtual machines up and running, you know, physical to virtual migration, etc., and basically ticked off all of those success criteria on the screen and a lot more as well. So our infrastructure guys were happy, our development guys were happy, the management team were happy that we've been able to prove, at least in principle, that virtualization was the right way forward for us to move our production services space into. So actually give more strength to that case before we actually started to roll out in production per se. The first thing we had to do was put a bit more meat around the business case itself. So management were happy we'd now demonstrated the capability, but they wanted to see that from a performance point of view and from a cost management point of view, that the virtualization platform based around VMware 2.5 would give us a better platform and a better business case than the virtual server platform. So we worked quite closely with a reseller called Computer Center. We went down to their lab environment just outside London, and we did a lot of testing around 2.4 and 8-way host servers running the VMware platform and compared that against the known results we already had for the virtual server platform. So we looked at number of virtual machines we could support per CPU, the number of VMs that we were able to support across the whole farm, cost of the hardware, cost of the virtualization software itself. This is prior to the very recent changes Microsoft and VMware have put in around their license agreements. But once we put all that information into an Excel spreadsheet and put all the commercials together, this actually worked out over 5 years, about 35% price difference in favor of the VMware platform compared to the Microsoft platform. So there's a very strong financial case as well as a technology case for us to move to the VMware platform rather than virtual server. So having done that cost analysis and that proof of concept piece, we then moved it into a project phase to actually deliver virtualization into the production space. So the first thing we did was to spend a lot of time with VMware and with the Computer Center guys to actually put a very detailed design piece together to look at what it is that we would deploy from a host point of view, storage point of view, how we would link it into the SAN, what management frameworks we would put in place, how we would link it into our existing systems before we started to put any single machine into the production space itself. So today we have in place a production space, a QA test environment at our DR data center. So we have environments in two different data centers spread about 100 miles apart with replication happening between the two sites, and I'll show you a picture of that shortly. We sorted out all the process and procedures between ourselves and our operations guys and our development guys before we even put a virtual machine into the data center itself. So we understood the change management process that we would go through, the testing that we would expect of our developers to test their application as part of the migration process before any of the virtual machines were actually deployed. And we broke the project down into four different phases to give ourselves and our operations guys in particular the comfort factor that they could safely and securely manage this operational environment, which was very different to the way they were operating before. So phase one of that environment was to deploy 11 servers for real, and we did that and got that up and running. And we literally ran that for 2 months before we made any other changes to the environment, and that gave our operations guys the comfort factor feel that they were happy to manage virtual machines as opposed to managing physical servers. Although we did have a slight problem when we first started with the vMotion type platform, our operators wanted to maintain an Excel spreadsheet for each host with all the VMs on it. So if we did a vMotion change, they wanted it changed back to that spreadsheet. they've now got to the point where they're a bit more confident about the virtualization platform and the vMotion service in particular. And one of our operations guys is here is learning a lot more about what we can do with VI3 and DRS in particular, which is going to really change the way that we do things in our production service. So having done that, we then went through the following two or three phases, and we're now in a final phase from a project point of view of migrating up to another 300 virtual machines into our production space, which will complete probably around about June, July next year. So that may sound fairly slow, but that's because we need development resource to test each of the applications as we migrate it. At the same time, we'll be putting new virtual machines in as new applications come along based on the VM platform. What we've now moved to from a senior management point of view is not putting virtualization as a way of consolidating physical servers that we already had. We're now at the point where every application that comes in has to justify not being a virtual machine if it's not going to go on the web services farm. And that's the space that we actually want to be in. And as you can see at the bottom of the screen, we're actually actively deploying VI3 in the development phase at the moment, and I'll go into a lot more detail about what we're doing with that and some of the automation we're doing in that space as well. So one of the other things we've already done is save some software licensing costs on some of the applications we've migrated. Some of the applications that we were running before were running on two processor physical servers, and they were based on per processor licenses. Because we've migrated them as virtual machines and they're single processor virtual machines, we've been able to reduce the license cost of those ISVs. So that's something to look out for when you're doing the migration work yourselves, is to look at the licensing cost of your software. If you can go back to your ISV and get them to agree a reduction in license cost because you're using virtual CPUs rather than physical, it's to your advantage to do that. So, this is what our physical infrastructure looks like today. As you can see on the left-hand side of the screen is our production data center, and on the right-hand side of the screen is our Wellingborough data center, which is where we do all of our disaster recovery and testing from. What we've actually done for VMware 2.5 is we've actually broken the farm down into cells of 10 servers. So because we haven't got DRS capability, what we've got is 9 active servers in each farm with one passive. So we've already got capacity to take on a diagnostic workload onto a separate server, and also gives it an environment to move things around if we wanted to do change management on a particular host. All of those hosts are connected into Clarion Tier 2 storage. We also use Symmetrix DMX for Tier 1. And that's front-ended by a Cisco NDS 9000 SAN fabric, dual fabric for each of the hosts, so there's massive redundancy built in. At the back end, we're using Cacher as a replication technology to replicate the VMDK files between the two data centers. And as you can see at the remote data center, we split the storage into two separate farms. So one farm is for our CTC, our QA environment. So we have a copy of the virtual machines in that space. The other farm is our disaster recovery farm. So the principle here is that a normal day practice, the farm is connected to the CTC environment so we can do QA testing, user acceptance testing, that sort of stuff. In a DR scenario, we will shut those hosts down and reconnect them to the production SAN and bring them back up and get those VMDK files sorted out and get the virtual machines back up and running. And what I'll show you towards the end of the presentation is a demonstration that we did only last week to some of our senior management team, where we've used Virtual Infrastructure 3 and Cacher to replicate between two different data centers. And we've used EMS orchestration from Enigmatic to actually automate the failover, not only locally within the data center when a host goes down, but also restore the service to the remote data center with an agreed service level time. So I'll show you all the screenshots of that in a video towards the end of the presentation. So, the other environment I mentioned earlier on is our test and development space, where we've been running virtual server for some time. And we've got about 700 or so virtual machines in that space, all of which have been hand-built by our infrastructure guys. So our development guys are very keen on virtualization to actually do lots of development work on. But we found with virtual server, it was very quick and easy to do that, but it doesn't give us the performance we need. So we're going to migrate that development space into VI3. What we've also got is a whole bunch of GSX licenses that projects in the past have bought to do their own development activities on. So we have a very disparate development community with no standard practice all the way through that development community, and the virtual machines are built in such a way that they don't look like production images. So there's no testing that virtual application against a production image, which is one of the things we want to get to. Most of those servers aren't backed up, and data held off-site. There's no service level agreement around most of those servers as well. So we're not actually providing a good value service to our development community, which is what we actually want to do. So we want to provide an environment that is managed by our operations staff, has an SLA behind it, but the development community themselves can look after their own virtual machines. And that's something we're starting to do today. So we have a growing pressing demand from our development community and from the business to actually increase the number of virtual machines we can support and the speed and consistency in which we apply them. And that's something that we're starting to do today. So that's where we are today. We've got, you know, a reasonable controlled managed environment for production, and we're starting to do the development work. But we have a very clear vision of where we want to take that virtual infrastructure piece moving forward. For us, virtual infrastructure is a foundation technology. It's an enabler, a facilitator of the things that we want to do within the data center. So in partnership with VI3, what we're also looking at is data center automation and tying those two together to give us a much more agile data center space. And we're starting to test that that strategy out and that product delivery out within our development environment, and then we'll start to move it to our production environment as we mature the process. We've given it a name, we've called it Alive, and that's been quite deliberate. We've had lots of people come into the organisation and talk to us about utility computing, grid computing and all that sort of stuff. And some of it has a bad name with some of our senior management team. So what we wanted to do was give the strategy a name that we would understand internally, and also we could use that as a benchmark with our partners, so that our partners would know what we were talking about when we started to talk about this particular framework. So in every conversation we have with VMware, with Enigmatic, with IBM, with Microsoft, about virtualization and what we're doing in that space, Alive is always the phrase that we now use. So it's become very much a standard terminology within Nationwide today. I found this on the net when I was putting the presentation together earlier on this year, and it's a quote from a guy called Bill McCall, who's a professor at Oxford University. I just thought it summed up what it is that we were trying to do with virtualization. So we see virtualization as not just the server space that VI3 is offering us today, but we're actively looking at how we can introduce virtualization into the network space and into the storage space to give us a virtual infrastructure platform that we can manage our business services on and not worry about the hardware platforms underneath moving forward. And that, to me, just seemed to sum up the whole ethos and approach that we're trying to adopt within Nationwide. So the technology layers that we're looking to actually deliver within this framework are the standard ones that you'd think about. And the ones that we're really focusing on today that we can actually get some really good value out are the resource management and infrastructure management services delivered by VI3, but also the policy-based automation service that AMS gives us from Enigmatic. So this is the space that gives us an orchestration management bus, if you like, that can start to glue our virtualization platform, our management services together so that we can orchestrate things in a lifecycle space, not only in the virtualization space today, but also moving forward into the physical space, into the storage networks, etc. So this is just the start of what we're trying to do. But because virtualization is so agile in its in the way it's made up, the orchestration is very much focused on virtualization today, and will then grow it out into the physical space as we mature our understanding of how it works and also understanding of our own processes and how we can link them all together. So to actually make it work, this will enable us to actually take our data center today, which is very much physical based, with the number of servers we actually have deployed. So roughly today in production we have about 80% of our servers are physical, only 20% of those servers are virtual. So though we have the capability of hosting a 30 server ESX farm in production with 450 VMs on it, we're actually only around about 100 today, and we'll be about 300 next year. So this is growing slowly. But what we want to do is by 2010 is get to the point where we've actually introduced a new hardware platform based on 64-bit multi-core technology. And we've started to introduce that across the piece for both SQL and our existing commodity servers, but in particular for our virtualization platform. And we get to the point where 80% of our estate is virtual and 20% is physical by that time frame. But also tied into that is the data center orchestration that we want to do as well by automating service delivery and lifecycle management within the data center. So, a lot more detail about Alive and what it is. Alive is a collaborative effort between Nationwide and the vision that we have, VMware as an infrastructure platform provider and Enigmatic as an orchestration provider. Computer Center helped bring us all together and facilitated some of the early discussions we had. But the Alive concept is something we've developed internally and actually brought our partners in. So we're actively engaged at a very senior level in VMware, Enigmatic, and within Computer Center to make that strategy a real delivery on the ground. And our service delivery for developers is the first thing that we've been able to do in that space. And I'll show you some of that as we go through the presentation. So what we're trying to do here is provide a highly available, fully automated environment in our data center that is capable of providing a service for our production environments, our development environments, and our testing environments, and meets all of our needs to make sure that we deliver a continuous level of service to the business. That's the vision that we're aiming to try and get to, and we'll take whatever steps we need on a pragmatic approach to actually get there. We fully recognise that there's no point in trying to go all out today and trying to get 24/7 non-stop across the board today. So we'll take a pragmatic approach and we'll focus our efforts on the business critical application environment and get the best value out of that as we move it forward. Our initial goals and objectives are to provide a self-service environment for our development community. And you'll hear a lot about VMware Lab Manager today, about the purchase that VMware have made from McKinsey. We actually started looking at this late last year, around about November timeframe last year, and we actually did a prototype very early this year on a similar service, and we're actually in production on that service now. It's just gone through a user acceptance testing mode. And I'll show you the details of that as we go through. But our aim here is very much aligned with what VMware are doing around lifecycle management. We want to be able to provide a self-service environment to our development community, but also the platform that we run that on is the environment where we'll develop new infrastructure services moving forward. So if we wanted to develop an automated DR service, we would test it out in that environment first and test the automation out before we moved it into our production space. So we're trying to link VI and our infrastructure services and our physical infrastructure components together through this orchestration framework that we've called Alive. We've already decided what the platform's going to be. It's dual core, four-way service. As demand grows, we may well move to eight-way service, but by that time we may well have quad core on the shelf, and that will give us the extra bandwidth that we might need. So we're looking at an automation service, a provision management service, all tied in together, and we're also looking to link this into our development framework, which is based around Microsoft Visual Studio Team System. So here we're looking at the possibility of taking MSIs out of Visual Studio and also linking into Microsoft SML language as it matures to enable us not only to deliver virtual machines but also the complete application stack, and eventually to deliver complete logical-based applications within the VM space. So as a developer develops an application in Visual Studio, they'll be able to go into there and the orchestration will be able to kick in, interpret the SML, and actually deliver the VMs and the network connections for them. They'll be able to do all the user acceptance testing, functionality testing in that space before we even think about moving it into either a physical space or a production virtual space. So our goal here is to reduce the development lifecycle and also provide a consistent level of service to our developers. So one of the things we're trying to do is we will provide a template of VMs for each of the services that we want to offer, and that template will be based on our production environment. So if our production servers today are based on Windows 2003 Service Pack 1, that will be the base template that we deploy in development. If we've got IIS 6 configured a certain way, then that will be the template that's deployed for a web presentation server. The same with .NET, BizTalk, MSMQ, SQL, and I'll show you that as we go through. We're trying to encourage our development community and our operations community to think about managing this in a much more dynamic way. So we want development to think about, you know, delivering applications that can be self-managed and putting all the instrumentation in there, but in a much more agile way in the virtualization space rather than the physical space. We're also giving our operations guys the opportunity to look at this environment and manage it in a development space before we mature it and move it into a production environment. So as it moves into production, and we move the automation bit into production as well, they have a very full understanding of that space and what it can offer them, and they'll have that confidence that it will work in production for them. So this is the infrastructure we're actually delivering today. It's based on VI3 with four-way dual-core hosts. Every VM that we deploy from a template point of view is as near to production image as we can make it. We have a backup and recovery service in that we allow the developers to go and snapshot the VMs themselves. The operators don't have to do that for them. It's fully self-service, so it's aligned with what VMware are doing with Lab Manager. And it gives us a single virtualization platform moving forward across development, eventually production, as we move the VI3 space into production and replace the 252 stuff we already have there. It will also become the environment that we use for testing new infrastructure services, so upgrade to VI environment, upgrade to the Microsoft operating system, all of those components and services that we need to test from an infrastructure point of view before they're rolled into production will be tested in this space before we roll them out. And our aim is to replace all other development activities that are currently going on within Nationwide, so we have a central space for all of our development community to actually use. So how did we convince management that it was worthwhile doing this and that we were going to get some business value out of it as well as some technology value? We sat down with VMware and Enigmatic in November last year, and we came up with a product description for a prototype piece that we could actually deliver something on, get it tested by our operations guys, our infrastructure guys, and also our development guys to see what they would think of it as a service. And this is the environment that we put together. So we've got a small ESX252 farm with the orchestration linked into Virtual Center. And that gave us the ability through a very simple web page to provision virtual machines, snapshot, turn them on and off, but also track who was actually creating those virtual machines based on our template and the information that we would need to capture from a commercial point of view as well. So to give you a bit of an idea of what that actually looked like, a few screenshots. So here's a very simple secure web page. Developers already logged in to it. As you can see, there's a table up there that shows a list of servers, what their status is, and there's actually nothing there. The developer hasn't actually created a virtual machine yet. So what we're offering here is the ability for a developer to go into a very simple web page, fill in a form, and get a virtual machine back. And during this proof of concept phase, we actually were able to deliver a 2003 or a 2000 virtual machine back to the developer within about 15 to 20 minutes. So what we've got here is a very simple web form. We're asking a developer to fill in a project ID, a cost center code, give the virtual machine a name, do they want a 2000 or 2003 build, and do they want a gold or silver template. And the difference between the two was gold was a two-processor virtual machine with 2 gigabytes of memory, the silver template is a single-processor VM with 1 gigabyte of memory. So it's very simple things to actually build and try out. Once the machines are actually built, the developer can see the virtual machines they've got, they're able to start and stop them, snapshot them if they need to. There's also a restore option there, which there's nothing there to restore at the moment, but if a developer had already done a snapshot, they'll be able to use the restore button to restore from that previous snapshot and get their service back up and running. We also offered the turning on and off of the persistent disk facility, which was available in ESX252 as well. So that was the prototype and what it looked like. And this is the feedback we got from the development community that actually used it for about 2 to 3 weeks. Found it very easy to use, wanted it left on as a service, so they really wanted to carry on using it. One of the guys that was actually involved in the user acceptance testing mode had already been trained on Virtual Center, and he was very insistent right up front that he didn't want to lose his access to Virtual Center. He wanted that control of his environment. Once he'd seen the tool that we actually provided as a prototype and actually used it, he said, I don't need Virtual Center anymore. I just need that very simple interface to go and create a virtual machine. I can then get up and running as a developer and start developing applications, which is what he's paid for. But we also got some very good feedback on the information that developers wanted to see as part of the service that we would offer. So if we were going to change the template to, say, Vista or Longhorn when that comes out, then they wanted that information published so they knew, A, that it was there and it was available to use, and B, what the template was, what information it provided, what services we were going to offer within that template as a build. So what we've got here is a very short video showing how that prototype actually works and the integration that we actually did. So we're logging into the portal, user ID, no password because we're actually integrated into Active Directory. So there's no password required from the developer point of view. We're going to go and create 2 virtual machines based on the gold template, one a 2000 server, one a Windows 2003 server. And what you'll see in a minute is the orchestration that links in that allows an administrator to authorize that build, but also the integration into Active Directory to populate the OUs with that image name and also the Outlook email to the developer so the VM's being built. So the user's actually completed the 2 forms for the 2 projects. Administrator's now going to log in and actually look at those 2 builds and say, okay, I'm going to let the developer have those 2 virtual machines and authorize them. And as soon as the administrators hit the submit button, the workflow kicks back off and the developmental activity starts going away again. So you see the request has been authorised. What we'll do now is go into Virtual Center, and you can see that across the bottom of the screen there, the two servers are starting to be built. We're populating Active Directory with the virtual machine name, and we're also linking this to email so that the developer knows A, the request has been authorised, and at the end of the build we'll get an email back saying the virtual machine's been built. For the prototype, this is quite just a simple email, just a bit of text. In the production environment, the email will actually give all the information the developer needs to actually start using that virtual machine, so it will give them a link to the console for the VM. They'll be able to log in straight away because they'll already have admin access, and they'll be able to start work without any other activity. So, just showing you what the templates look like. So we've got a 2 gig and a 1 gig template, so that's the gold and silver template. Sys prepping the virtual machine so it's fully ready for the developer to actually use, and then restarting it. We'll go back to the page the user originally logged in and refresh that page, and we will see that the two virtual machines have been added into that space. So within 15 minutes, the developer's got two new virtual machines up and running, ready for him to use, fully populated with all the information he needs to start the service that he wants to provide. So that was the prototype, and that was done back in January this year. And it got a huge vote of confidence from the development community themselves. The next thing that we had to do was convince our senior management that it was worth investing time, effort, and money in actually delivering that environment for real, based on the VI3 platform. So we spent the next 2 or 3 months looking at what it was that we could do to justify that case. We looked at the business case, you know, the costs for actually doing this, how much we would save from an automation point of view, as against the using staff to actually manage that environment, looking at the consistency of service we could provide to our development community, and how we could then link that into our production environment and give our operations staff the ability to use the same platform in the future to deliver new virtual machines into production. That was all signed off back in the summer of this year, so we've gone from January to around about June, July, and we've got the sign-off to actually deliver that service, and we're starting to deliver that service today. So what we're doing today is we're deploying a VI3 farm in a small lab environment based in our head office so that we can control the rollout of what we're doing, and we're going to give that to a small community of our developers to actually start that service up and running and start things up and going. So what we've got is VI3, Virtual Center 2. We've got a SharePoint front end where the orchestration pack fits in as a web part at the front of it. The reason for SharePoint is that we're also going to use this space for collaboration activities, for sharing information amongst not only developers, but infrastructure and operations guys on best practice in the VI space. So we'll also link out to all the stuff that's out there in the network, as well as publishing design guides, template information, etc. internally. So that farm's in place today, and we're just starting to finish off the UAT for that environment before running it out into our Wellingborough data center early next year. The reason for the delay at Wellingborough is the environment physically needs some refurbishing work, and once that's done, we'll be able to host about 50-odd ESX3 servers in that environment. That will give us the ability to supply our development community with anything up to 2,000 virtual machines in a very dynamic way. So as I said a few minutes ago, we've got a portal service based on SharePoint, so we can link all that collaboration activity in. So specifically what that initial portal service allows the developers to do is go and create a virtual machine and start and stop it, do a snapshot, and the virtual machine is created from a template, as I said earlier, and we have a number of templates that we're designing. So the first one is the OS template itself, but then we're also having templates added into the framework. So a developer will be able to go in and say, I want a web services server based on Windows 2003, and they'll get that web services server based on our production standards. So when they start developing their web service for a new application, the interoperability between the web services farm that's already out there and their code that they're developing will be pre-tested in the development environment before they even get to production. So the only real difference between a development virtual machine and a production virtual machine is the security context. That's the primary difference. All the systems management software that we need to manage that virtual machine, including antivirus software, is on that farm. So one of the things we're able to do is, running Windows Update Service in the background, we're able to patch those virtual machines as they come up and running. What we're going to do in probably about 2 or 3 months' time is we're going to introduce a quarantine service around it as well. So If a developer goes into the portal, creates a virtual machine, then decides, actually, I'm going to go on holiday for 2 weeks, so I'm just going to suspend my VM, comes back and wants to start work again, we're actually going to grab that virtual machine before it hits the network, and we'll scan it from an antivirus point of view, update the DAT files, run Windows Update Service against it, then we'll restart the VM and hand it back to the developer. If at that point the developer code fails and the application falls over, it's up to the developer to fix it because it's no longer working against the template that it needs to work against. So this is some screenshots of what that new service actually looks like as it's up and running. What we've got down the left-hand side is a hierarchical list showing different departments and different projects and also the blueprints. So right at the top, we've got a number of departments. We've got our IT governance department, we've got a retail banking group, and then we've got some blueprints underneath that. What we're actually going to break the thing down to is actually every project that comes along will have a group in here, and all their VMs that they create will go into that group. So the project manager as a whole will have an idea of how many VMs their project has got, who created them, how long the lease is for, because the virtual machine is now leased rather than owned by the project, and what template it was built on. So at the back end of this, we have a huge amount of SQL MIS data that we're able to interface through reporting services and give project managers, operators, business folks a view of what's actually happening in the infrastructure, what services are being used, and how much it's actually costing them to use that service. The list of templates already there, gold, platinum, silver. And as you can see, down the bottom of the screen there, there's a whole list of activities. As you can see, the virtual machine is being created and being provisioned or being approved by the project. So, what does a template actually look like? Here's a copy of a gold template. As you can see, by default, we offer two CPUs as the gold template, but we give the developer the opportunity to actually have that as a single CPU as well. So although we're constraining the development activity to a certain standard, we're giving them some flexibility on the amount of resource they can consume. But if the more resource are consumed, the more costly the VM is to them as a service. Also done the same for memory. So by default, if they just go with the default, we'll get 512 megabytes of RAM, but they can actually step that up to 4 gigabytes if they so wish. But if they step it up to 4 gigabytes, again, the cost of that project will go up because we'll capture the project code information for every virtual machine that's actually created. You see there's also a lease period there. Default for what we're doing from a UAT point of view is 28 days, and we can change that to anything like 365 days, whatever it is. When that lease period expires, unless there's been a request from the developer to actually extend it, the VM is deleted from the framework. So we recover that resource and we're then able to give it back to somebody else to use. So we expect to be able to manage that 2,000 VM estate that I was talking about earlier and keep the actual resource that's being used around about the 2,000 cap for probably the next couple of years, because we'll probably peak around about 1,500 VMs, then go up to about 1,800, and then as VMs drop off because projects have closed down, it'll go back down to 1,500 again. So we're maximizing the utilization of the resource that we have, and as you heard from one of the keynotes yesterday, you know, VMware are working on power management, and that's one of the things that we would like to see plugged into the framework. So if we've got 50 hosts and only 25 of them are being used, we can use the power management to cycle those hosts down and recoup some power costs back from the data center as well. A little bit more detail about the template that we're offered. So you can see from here that the template itself is based on a base OS and also a SQL Server has been added. So what we're providing our developers is, you know, standard web server, web services server, MSMQ server, BizTalk server, or SQL Server. It can be provisioned, fully configured, populated in our Active Directory, and ready for them to use without them having to do anything themselves. So they don't have to get an MSDN license to go away and install SQL or anything like that. They can just do it. And they can probably do that within about half an hour or so. The SLA that we will offer will probably be about 2 to 3 hours, so that gives us the capability to add more functionality into the service as we grow it. And every time a virtual machine is created, we get the email back saying, here it is, and we've got all the information in the database so that we can do some reporting against it, say who's used it, when it was used, how long the lease is for, etc. This is what the final environment will look like when we deploy in Wellingborough later this year. So we've grown the farm from 3 or 4 servers to about 50 four-way hosts based on dual-core technology. We have the virtual center database and the database behind the portal service itself. So we've got a rich set of MIS data which we can now use to analyze what's happening in our development space and actually get best use of that environment, and also focus the cost back to the projects themselves. So what we're doing initially is charging for those VMs as they're deployed by our project, putting that money in a central pot, as it were, and when we run out of host infrastructure or storage infrastructure, we'll use that funding to actually add the additional resource that we need to continue to add the service to the customer within our development community. You may wonder why we've done this with Enigmatic from an orchestration point of view and why we haven't used Lab Manager. As I said earlier on, we started this work off very early this year, so we were quite well mature in this space before the Lab Manager purchase by VMware. But what we're trying to do is not just about service provisioning to our development community, it's about data center orchestration as well. So to demonstrate that capability to our senior management, we then took the next step with Enigmatic to show how we might use the framework that we're building to actually orchestrate failover locally within the data center to provide a better high availability service, but also within a DR scenario, being able to fail over between two different data centers. In order to do that, we set up a proof of concept environment, and we demonstrated this only last week to about 12 of our senior management and technical staff across infrastructure, DR, and operations. And we set that up using the framework that you can see there, which is a reasonable representation of the type of infrastructure we would use within Nationwide. So you can see we've got Cisco switches, Cache network appliances, we've got some storage behind that, and we're using IBM Blade Centers to host the VI3 platform on. So the demo that we wanted to do was to demonstrate a group of virtual machines as a good representation of our application stack we would normally provide to a production environment. So you can see some web presentation servers there, web services servers, BizTalk, and a database server. And that's typical of a Nationwide Microsoft-based application stack, all sat within a resource group. What we did for the first part of the scenario was we looked at what would happen if a single host failed and how we would manage the resource allocation in that space. But the real piece that we wanted to do to demonstrate to our senior management was the ability to actually recover from a complete data center catastrophe. So the data center's gone down, we want to restore that service and get it back up and running. How do we actually go about doing that? Well, today that's very much a manual process in what we do today. Yes, we replicate the data, but to actually get those VMs running or those physical servers up and running, lots of people are involved in looking at Word-based manual documents saying, how do I get this service up and running? How do I get that server restored? Well, what's the IP address that it should be running and which domain is it in, etc. So we're actually using EMS orchestration, again from Enigmatic, to actually show that we can actually do that in a consistent manner and restore service with an agreed SLA from a business continuity point of view as well as from a HA point of view. So for the purposes of the demonstration, we just looked at this at a very low level, but what we can actually do in real world scenario is we can actually link that resource management and that HA management to resource groups within DRS, to CPU shares, to VM priorities, so we can set the business focus as we need it depending upon what it is our infrastructure and our business actually demands. So to show you how that works, again, another short video, and I'll walk you through some of the screenshots of the service as it actually ran. So what you can see up here is the virtual center screenshot showing the production farm with three hosts and all the different application servers up there running. On the far right-hand side of the screen, there's the data store for Cache and where it is. And what you can see now is the recover point screen, which is the cache screen showing how the replication is working. So you can see our production environment has access to storage and we're replicating that data to the remote end. And the server farm at the remote end doesn't have access to that storage as yet because it's not actually active. So here's the Wellingborough farm. As you can see, we've got development and UAT actually running there. So we're actually using the farm for development activity, but it's also going to become the VR farm when we actually need it. You can also see as we've gone through the screens there that the production service is not active at that site. So here's the EMS management screen showing the managed elements that we're managing, the failover time for a local failover, which services are actually running, and what it is that we would need to do if we stopped the service. So at the moment we're running okay. What we're going to do now is we're actually going to kill off one of the ESX hosts and stop all those services on that host as if it had actually failed. And what we'll see then is how we actually then recover from that service within an agreed SLA. So we've now killed that service. the host has gone down, the web services service has disappeared off the framework. EMS will recognise that some of the elements that it's managing, the services actually stopped. So you can see the red triangle starting to appear on the screen. So EMS also recognises we have sufficient capacity to restore that service locally. So it's going to invoke a local SLA for a HA failover, which has got an agreed time frame of 60 seconds. So within 60 seconds, EMS has to fail over those elements and restore that service to a new part of the infrastructure. And that's what you'll start to see taking place. The clock started ticking on the service, so EMS has now got 60 seconds to actually start that up and running. And this is actually running in real time, so the video does go on for a little while. So the host is still down. What you'll see as we start to come up is the web services service, etc., being deployed across the other two hosts and the service being restored within a very short period of time. And it will actually be restored well within the service level agreement. Now that we've done that, we're now going to kill off a service on another part of the farm. So we've killed off another host. Don't recommend this in your production environment, by the way. The operators might get angry with you. What we'll see now is that EMS has recognised that another service has gone down, and it will know that there is insufficient capacity to maintain a production service on the infrastructure that's left at that production site. So what it will do now is start to invoke the DR SLA, so it will have 300 seconds to restore service at the remote site. What that actually involves is using cacher to checkpoint the VMDK files and make sure that they're available at the remote site, which we'll see that happening shortly. But it will also involve shutting down the production service that remains at the production site, going to the remote Wellingborough site, which is our DR site, and shutting down the development service and the UAT service and changing the resource profile for those services. And then we'll see it restore the production service back into the Wellingborough site. So as you can see, the replication is still continuing at the moment. Nothing's available at Wellingborough, but we're now doing the checkpoint. So basically cache is doing what's called a bookmark, which is basically checkpointing to make sure the data is secure before we actually make it available on the storage farm at the remote site. It just takes a couple of seconds to refresh itself. And there it goes, it's been refreshed, it's now up to date. So we've now changed from direct access and no access at Wellingborough to logged access. So Wellingborough now recognises it's going to get access to that data as we bring it up. So in the meantime, we're able to start shutting down the service. The SLA clock has already kicked in, and we're now going to go in and start shutting down those services that we no longer need from a development activity point of view, so that we can leave enough resource capable to support the production environment as it's come up. So we can start the production service at the same time as we're shutting down the development service. And that's all happening at the moment. So you can see the data store starting to become available. And we'll see the virtual machine starting to power up very shortly from a production point of view, and we'll see the development ones actually going down. What we'll actually do is we'll shut down the development activity altogether, and we'll just leave a small amount of resource capable to support in the UAT environment, so we can continue to do UAT on a limited scale once the resource is up. Now what EMS is doing is not actually fixing the fault at the remote site that's gone down, it's just actually restoring the service and making sure it's up and running. It can then alert any management framework that you have, whether it's MOM, BMC Patrol, etc., saying there's a problem somewhere that needs to be fixed to get the other site back up and running. What I'll do, just to save a little bit of time, is just put this into quick mode just to finish off the slide deck a little bit quicker. VMs have been powered up. UAT's gone down. And what we've actually done is been able to restore the production service, rather than in 300 seconds, which is the agreed SLA, actually in 185 seconds, which is well within the SLA that we'd actually published for that service. So this has actually been demonstrated to our management team, and what we're going to do now is actually look at a core set of applications to actually see, you know, do this actually for real within the VI space itself. So moving this forward, our whole infrastructure strategy is based around improving the data center efficiency that we have, both around physical and virtual infrastructure. And you've seen what we've been able to do so far with the UAT space and development space around service delivery. And what we've been able to demonstrate the capabilities of from a business continuity point of view. And we're going to start building that together with EMS as the orchestration framework, based around the standards you can see on the screen there. So our service management is based around ITIL and CMMI, and we're going to use those as templates to actually automate the processes as we move forward to achieve lower cost service provision within the data center based around the orchestration framework that EMS actually supplies us. Adding virtualization and the automation base enables us to create a much simpler infrastructure for our operations guys to manage. The operators themselves can focus on service delivery, so the infrastructure guys and the real technical experts can focus on developing the policies and the frameworks that we're going to use within EMS to actually orchestrate the rest of the data center as we move it forward. As I said earlier on, we're starting this in the development space, but we're going to move that into the production space via our QA space, which we call CTC. So as we mature the processes in development from an orchestration point of view, whether that's service delivery, whether it's delivering storage, delivering network provisioning, delivering virtual appliances that could be Solaris or Linux-based as well as Windows-based, then we'll do all of that through that life cycle. So we're actually life cycle the infrastructure as well as life cycle the whole development activity as we move it forward into our production space. So here's our framework, and here's all the types of things we're trying to offer in that service as we move it forward. Integration with all of those different services you can see up on the screen. So what we're trying to get to the point is we have a complete framework that delivers not only individual virtual machines, but a complete service framework. It's integrated to a database at the back end, so we get reporting on all the information that's created. So we've got loads of MIS data we can use from a business intelligence point of view to actually look at what it is that's happening in our space, how many licenses we've used, what products we're using, who's using them for what purpose. And there's a whole list of products that we will want to look to integrate the framework with, not least of which is the virtual infrastructure piece itself, which we're focused on today, but also things like Active Directory, monitor management framework. We're also working with, talking to Cisco about what they're doing with vFrame and looking at the integration we might want to do in that space. And we're also looking at how we manage storage provision and SAN provision around the Cisco MDS 9000 range as well. So our long-term aim is to actually deliver all of these services and use EMS as an orchestration management bus to actually link all of those components together. And the reason we've done that is because we already have MOM as a management framework, we already have SMS as a provisioning service, we already have asset and license management databases. What EMS gives us is a glue that glues those things together, so it gives us reporting and orchestration in the data center so that we can make things more agile and more consistent, but also we can report on those services and give our planning and governance people and our infrastructure people much more idea of what's happening in the infrastructure today. So just to summarise what we're trying to do, we see virtualisation as a foundation technology, and the strategy itself, if you're going to deploy virtualisation, should be focused around storage, network and server virtualisation, not just the server piece itself. The server piece is great because there's a lot of stuff happening in the VMware space today, but storage and network is part of that. As a foundation technology itself, it delivers great value, but if you add in policy-based automation or data center automation as well, you get much more business value than the things that you can achieve. You can be much more agile, much more consistent in the services you're offering in the data center. So we can deliver configuration and asset management, we can deliver capacity on demand, and we can deliver service level focused management as well. And the lesson that we've learned from the things we've done so far is that we need to take a very pragmatic one-step approach rather than trying to eat the whole elephant in one go. So at the end of the day, what it is that we're trying to do is change the culture of our organisation and the way that we work. And it's so much about the people and the processes that we have and the culture that we have in the organisation as it is about the technology that we're trying to deliver and the automation that we're trying to put on top of that. Thank you very much. We are a little bit short of time, but I'm quite happy to take any questions if anybody's got any. Otherwise, I'm around through the conference, and I'll be on the enigmatic stand for a little while. You also might want to hear that we're publishing an IDC white paper on the framework that we put in place, and that will be available on the marketplace in about 2 weeks' time. If you want a copy of that, see the enigmatic guys, some of them are here today, or go to the stand, give them your details, and they'll send you the IDC white paper when it comes out in about 2 weeks' time. For us, SQL is the main application that doesn't today lends itself to virtualization. The reason for that is most of our databases are very I/O intensive. So what we've done is consolidated those databases into a small platform. So rather than having about 150, 200 individual database servers, we have about 4 with lots of SQL instances on each server. And we're offering a higher level of service for that and a higher throughput for that than we're able to do in the virtualization space. There are some smaller databases that are used by some applications where the application is very closely linked, and we have virtualized those, but we don't see SQL as a virtualized platform, probably for about another 3 to 4 years at least. Any more? Okay, thank you very much. And please hand your feedback forms at the back as you go through.
Good, thank you.
I'll send you an email. Oh, sorry.